You're listening to Weird Medicine with Dr. Steve on the Riotcast Network, riotcast.com.
I've got diphtheria crushing my esophagus. I've got Ebola virus dripping from my nose. I've got the leprosy of the heart valve, exacerbating my incredible woes. I want to take my brain out and blast it with the wave, an ultrasonic echographic and a pulsating shave. I want a magic pill for my ailments, the health equivalent of Citizen Kane. And if I don't get it now in the tablet, I think I'm doomed and I'll have to go insane. I want a requiem for my disease, so I'm paging Dr. Steve. Dr. Steve!
It's Weird Medicine, the first and only Wow.
That was close.
Yeah, it was close. It's Weird Medicine, the first and still only uncensored medical show in the history of broadcast radio, now a podcast. I'm Dr. Steve with my little pal, Dr. Scott, traditional Chinese medical practitioner who keeps the alternative medicine wackos at bay. Welcome back, Dr. Scott.
Hey, Dr. Steve. Glad to be here.
This is a show for people who would never listen to a medical show on the radio or the internet. If you've got a question you're embarrassed to take to your regular medical provider, if you can't find an answer anywhere else, give us a call at 347-766-4323. That's 347.
Poohhead.
And visit our website at drsteve.com for podcast medical news and stuff you can buy, or go to our new merchandise store at cafepress.com/weirdmedicine. Check us out on Twitter, Weird Medicine, or drscottwm. Most importantly, we are not your medical providers. Take everything with a grain of salt. Don't act on anything you hear on the show without talking it over with your doctor, nurse practitioner, physician assistant, pharmacist, chiropractor, acupuncturist, yoga master, physical therapist, clinical laboratory scientist, registered dietitian, or whatever. All right, very good. Hey, don't forget to check out feels.com/fluid. Feels.com/fluid. And not only do they provide us with broad-spectrum CBD that's pharmaceutically, you know, accurate as far as their GC mass spec is concerned, they prompted Dave Cecil and I to produce a new song just for them, and then he ended up liking the song so much we recorded it for him. So, if you didn't get to hear it, listen to the end of last episode. And stuff.drsteve.com for all your Amazon needs. Stuff.drsteve.com. You can get everything there. Except right now, hand sanitizer. You maniacs with the hand sanitizer. And then tweakedaudio.com, offer code FLUID for 33% off the best earbuds for the market on the price. I mean, on the market for the price, and the best customer service anywhere. If you want to lose weight with me without having to contract some damn virus, go to noom.drsteve.com. You get 2 weeks free of the Noom app, which you can do on your Android or iTunes or Apple. What's the operating system? Just phone operating system, iOS.
iOS, yeah.
Yeah,
I'm
iOS.
I'm an Android guy.
I'm an idiot. Yep. Yeah, I'm an Android phone guy. I'm a Mac guy all the way, but
Mac
I've
Daddy.
Never had an iPhone. But noom.drsteve.com. It's not a diet. It's a psychology app. It will change your relationship with food, and it has allowed me to remain at my ideal body weight for some time now. I'm very excited about it. Don't forget to check out Dr. Scott's website. It's simplyherbals.net. Is it still up?
It is for now, yeah.
You're still selling some stuff on there?
Yeah, waning. Yeah.
Well,
we still got stress less than them.
Yeah.
Unless get somebody to buy it, that'd be ideal.
Okay. Well,
The sinus spray for sure.
Go check out poor old Dr. Scott's.
Falling down.
Place at simplyherbals.net. And so you haven't been here for a while. This has become coronavirus podcast or radio show. But I did want to give some updates on some things. A couple of shows ago, we were talking about this drug called remdesivir. Have you heard about it?
No, I haven't.
Okay, well, let me see if I can get this to come up. So remdesivir is a broad-spectrum antiviral, and this company called Gilead Sciences is working on it. And they're working closely with global health authorities to respond to the novel coronavirus COVID-19 outbreak. So remember, The virus is called SARS-CoV-2, but the disease that it causes is called COVID-19. Mm-hmm. So it's coronavirus disease 2019. They're doing use of an investigational compound called remdesivir. It's actually not a compound. It's a molecule, but anyway. Together with the U.S. Food and Drug Administration and the CDC and the Department of Health and Human Services and National Institute of Allergies and Infectious Diseases, and the Department of Defense, and the China CDC and the National, they're working with everybody. Mm-hmm. They're focused on working with on this drug called remdesivir. So it's an investigational nucleotide with broad-spectrum antiviral activity. It's not approved anywhere globally for any use, but it has demonstrated in vitro and in vivo activity in animal models against viral pathogens of MERS, that's the Middle East Respiratory Syndrome, which is much more deadly. But,
what a
coincidence.
Call.
Tacy, you're on Weird Medicine. And then she hangs up. Whatever.
Oh, my God. How many years?
What do you think we do up here? MERS is Middle East Respiratory Syndrome. It is much more, it has a much higher mortality rate per case, but it is much less transmissible. Apparently, MERS gets deep down in your lungs, and it's hard for you to transmit it unless you have a big old lung hockey that you cough up, and then somebody somehow, touches that and puts that in their mouth.
Okay.
And then SARS, which also was less of a crisis because it really didn't spread far outside of Asia. But they're also coronaviruses. And they're structurally similar to this COVID-19. And limited preclinical data on remdesivir and MERS and SARS indicate that remdesivir may have potential activity against COVID-19. Hmm. So it's an experimental medicine that's only been used in a small number of patients with COVID-19 to date. So how do we – this is where I wish Cliff was here because he would give me more of the lay person's answer. But how would you determine whether this stuff works? What do you think, Dr. Scott? How would you do it?
Well, outside of a double-blind placebo study.
Which I would not do in this case because it would be unethical. So, so we might want to do a blinded study but not placebo-controlled. Right. But anyway.
Yeah, I think in a lot of cases, things like this, they're starting to fast-track them through the FDA.
Yeah. So, but how would you know if this stuff does anything?
The medicine itself?
Yeah.
By giving it to someone who's got all the signs and symptoms.
Okay, so they get better. So what? 96% of people get better anyway.
You've got to measure that with people who don't take the medicine and give the timeline of if they stop having a fever in 2 days instead of 4 days, that's an improvement. Or
there you go.
How many people do not have to go on to a ventilator?
That's right.
Which is really what freaks
What you're really, really pointing poor. Out, I hope this is the point you're trying to make, ineloquently as you are,
yes.
Is that, you got to test a shitload of people because if 96% of people get better, that's assuming a 4% mortality rate. And we're going to talk about that in a minute because it just depends. Mm-hmm. It depends on who you are, what your mortality rate is. But overall, let's say it's 3%. So then you got 97% of people get better anyway. So you give this to 100 people and 97 of them get better
anyway.
You're like, well, it looks like it works. Well, no, the 3% are still dying.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sorry, I don't have COVID-19. I've got bad allergies, though.
You which, and me,
by
both.
The way. This is allergy season. Then you get on a plane and you're, hacking and stuff. Everybody's going to look at you sideways. That kind of sucks.
I've been telling people that for this whole week. I'm allergic to the Bradford pear trees. And when they turn white, I start sneezing.
Is that right?
And I am just miserable, and I'll be miserable for two more weeks.
So how do you tell if somebody is a candidate to be afraid of? It's if they have a fever.
The fever, correct. Yep. And typically, I don't think they're seeing as much of the congestion and the nasal runny noses with the COVID-19 is my understanding.
It's cough and fever right. Is the big thing.
Right, it's not the runny nose.
And no diarrhea.
Cha-cha-cha.
Which right. is good. Although the virus is being excreted in stool, so he's still, it's going to be clean.
Right, sure.
But, so how would you tell? Well, you give this stuff to thousands of people, mm-hmm. and then you see if you can reduce that, the rate of, like Dr. Scott said, can you reduce the duration of the illness?
Mm-hmm.
Can you reduce the number of people that end up on a ventilator, and then ultimately are you reducing the number of people who die?
Yeah, the severity of it.
So, right. But you have to, because most people have a mild self-limited illness, you got to give it to a shitload of people for this to make any sense at all.
You know, and I was just reading too, Dr. Steve, and I know you know this, but about the 1918 flu,
yep.
the H1N1, I was just looking at the numbers on this thing, and it's staggering.
It was insane.
It's just staggering. You know, you're talking about 500 million estimated worldwide yep. that got the flu.
That was,
and they're saying somewhere in the neighborhood of 675,000 United States citizens died from
yeah,
that flu.
Worldwide, it was
50 million
worldwide.
People. Yeah.
So you had 50 million die.
Yep.
500 million got it. That was 10%.
That's a big number.
Of the world's population. So 10% of 10% is 1%. So this killed 1% of the world's population. You say, well, you had a 99% chance of not dying,
right.
but it was still 50 million people. That's how big a billion is.
It's massive.
You know, there were 5 billion people on the earth at that time.
Yep.
So, 1% of 5 billion.
Let's just say 1% billion. Today, what is that? You know, what's
yeah.
the population?
Well, let's find out. Echo, what's 1% of 7.5 billion?
1% of 7.5 billion is 75 million.
Yeah.
Yep.
That kind of followed from 1%
sure,
of 5
sure.
billion. But it's a big damn number.
It's
and
a big
even though
number. Oh my
you,
gosh.
The vast majority of the people,
gotta be okay.
overwhelming majority, were totally fine.
Yeah.
It's crazy. One thing that we did learn from that, and I'm going to get back to this remdesivir. On September 28th, 1918, Liberty Loan Parade in Philadelphia. So they decided, you know, in the middle of this pandemic, we're going to have the parade anyway. It prompted a huge outbreak of flu in that city. There's a huge spike.
Yes.
You look at other cities that had, started to quarantine and said do self-isolation even in 1918, you see no spike. You see just a sort of a smoldering amount of cases.
Mm-hmm.
So self-isolation really does work.
Mm-hmm.
And quarantining people works as well if we have to get that far.
Huge, yeah.
Let me talk a little bit about these remdesivir trials. Yeah. Gilead initiated these trials. They initiated 2 phase 3 clinical studies. So phase 3 clinical studies where you're giving this to thousands of people.
Okay.
So phase 1, so you have this sort of preclinical phase. You have the discovery phase where we think we've discovered something. You have a preclinical phase where you start thinking, well, how would we give this to people?
Okay.
And do we, you know, if we give it to rats, does it just automatically kill them? And then phase 1, you give it to a few people, just see if, as long as people aren't dropping dead, maybe you've got some benefit. Of course, with this, a phase 1 trial of 100 people ain't going to tell you anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're just not dropping dead from taking the medicine.
Right.
And then you have your phase 2 trials where you'll do even more people. And now they're up to phase 3 on this remdesivir. So that's when you blast it out to thousands of people and you're looking at efficacy. In other words, does it benefit people? And if so, how? And then you're looking at safety. Does it harm people? If so, how?
Mm-hmm.
And then phase 4 would be post-marketing. So that's after you bring it out to market, then you just follow people. Now you've got millions of people taking it. Mm-hmm. Is there a small effect that you could have missed?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you have an adverse effect of, let's say, cardiac events, and it's 1 in 10,000 people,
mm-hmm.
you won't see that till post-marketing when you got millions of people on it.
Right. Okay. Makes sense.
All right. So Gilead has initiated two phase three clinical studies to evaluate the safety and efficacy of remdesivir in adults diagnosed with COVID-19. Following the U.S. Food and Drug Administration's rapid review and acceptance of Gilead's investigational new drug filing. Good. Yeah, this is one. They've had this drug for a while. They were using it on some other things. And they said, hey, we've got this drug. Works. We've got some data. Although that's going to be limited data because there weren't that many MERS cases in general. Mm-hmm. The randomized open label multi-center studies will enroll approximately 1,000 patients at medical centers primarily across Asian countries, as well as other countries globally with high numbers of diagnosed cases. So I would assume Italy would be in there beginning March 2020. So that's they're doing it now. The first of two studies will evaluate the safety and efficacy of both a 5-day and a 10-day dosing regimen of remdesivir in addition to a standard of care. Okay. So you treat them like you normally would, but you add this stuff for patients with severe manifestations of COVID-19. So they're going to hit the most severe patients because, you know, maybe down the line we'll find out, well, you need to start this stuff before they get severe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's Tamiflu is that way.
Right.
You need to institute Tamiflu in the first 48 hours. Mm-hmm. Well, you don't know how severe your syndrome is going to be at that point. Second study will evaluate the safety and efficacy of the same dosing regimen of remdesivir in addition to standard care of patients with moderate manifestations. So they're going to hit the people who are ending up in the hospitals first, and then they'll do this second arm where it's people that are just starting to feel like crap. I don't know how they're going to tease out moderate manifestations versus mild, and they're going to do it compared with standard of care alone. So they'll have all these controls out there. It's just people that they didn't give the drug to, you know, and then they can compare that because they're really every patient is being monitored at this point, at least statistically. Now, there are other trials. Health authorities in China have initiated two clinical trials in patients who have been infected with COVID-19 to determine the safety and efficacy of remdesivir as a potential treatment for the coronavirus. Two studies are being coordinated by the China-Japan Friendship Hospital and are being conducted at multiple sites in Hubei province. Gilead is providing study drug at no charge and provided input on study design and contact. So we don't have any good results yet. There is a phase two adaptive randomized double-blind placebo-controlled trial into remdesivir done by the NIAID. And they're looking at people with COVID-19, and they're providing study drug there, too. So, all right, so we'll just see. There is some compassionate use. Let's see what they're saying here. It's important to note that the results in individual compassionate use cases are not sufficient to determine the safety and efficacy. So you can apply for compassionate use if you've got somebody that's really in dire straits and you're at your last legs. They'll provide you with the drug, but it doesn't get included in the study data. That's really what they're saying there. Mm. So who's at risk of dying from this stuff? That's what we all care about, right? I kind of almost don't care if I end up in the hospital as long as I don't die.
Mm-hmm.
Knock on wood. Mm-hmm. Our buddy Richard David Smith ended up in the hospital with flu, ended up on the ventilator, but he's okay now.
Oh, good.
So I think he would be a proponent of aggressive treatment in a case like that. He's one of our biggest proponents of influenza vaccine because of that. But if you are less than 10 years old so far, and we're recording this on Wednesday, March 11th, mm-hmm. there have been zero cases of kids dying from this disease. Now, that is interesting because usually it's bimodal. You get a bunch of little kids and a bunch of old people who die from these things, you know, like influenza and stuff. Hmm. Zero fatalities, 0 to 9 years old. Now, when you get 10 to 19, it's 0.2%. So my kids are, 15 and 16.
Mm-hmm.
They have a 99.8% chance, if they get it, of not dying from
good.
It. So
that's a good thing.
It is a good thing. Their dad, not so rosy. So it's 0.2 and 0.2 all the way from, so it's 0 up to 10 years old, and then from 10 to 40, it's 0.2. From 40 to 50, it's 0.4, so it doubles, but still low,
mm-hmm.
right? And then you get up to 50 to 59. How old are you?
51.
Okay, so your odds of dying are 1.3% if you get it.
Well, shit.
Yeah, it's still. It's three times.
Now, that's what I was going to say. That's a hell of a lot
three
more
times
than,
yeah. more than a 40-year-old. But you can say, well, it's 300% more. Well, this just shows the difference between relative risk and absolute risk.
Right on.
So relative risk is 300% more. If I told you that, you'd be shitting
I'm
yourself.
I'm fucked. I'd be going to the bank and pulling out all my money.
Right,
and
that's right.
Spending on hookers and cocaine.
I'm so with you on that. Because mine is 300% more than yours.
Oh, geez.
Which
you
means
and I are screwed, man.
900% more than the 40-year-old. But still low. So yours is 1.3. So if you get it, you have a 98.7% chance of surviving.
Yes. Okay.
I mean, seriously, if I gave you those odds, you'd go to Vegas and spend
sure.
every penny.
Sure, sure.
You'd bet it all on black.
Yep.
Double up again.
Yep.
Be a while before you'd probably lose.
Yep.
Okay, so 60 to 69, 3.6%. So that's me. I'm 64. So I still have a... What is that? 96.4% chance of not dying.
Still pretty good on it.
70 to 79, 8%. Still not bad. 92% chance of not croaking. Then if you're 80 or more, then, well, you don't want to know the number for that one. So, no, it's 14.8%. And they'll give you this other number of 22%. That's in confirmed cases. But remember, there's a ton of presumed cases mm-hmm. in China that were not confirmed because the test wasn't ready yet.
Right on.
So that's why you can get those two numbers. Now, if you're male overall, in 2.8% mortality rate, and this is all cases, that includes unconfirmed cases. If you're female, 1.7%. So you're twice, no, that'd be 3.4. So a little less than twice is likely to die from it if you have an X chromosome.
Sure.
Yeah. Now, this is the one that bugs me. Pre-existing conditions. If you have no pre-existing condition, your death rate for all cases is 0.9%. But who has no pre-existing conditions? The top five pre-existing conditions were cancer, hypertension, chronic respiratory disease, that'd be emphysema, mm-hmm. diabetes, or cardiovascular disease. Now, I have hypertension. At least mm-hmm. I've been diagnosed with it. I'm on medication. Since I lost all this weight, I don't know if I still have hypertension. But does that count as treated hypertension?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have to have an elevated blood pressure or just have the propensity toward hypertension? I looked everywhere, have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't say diagnosis of, so I'm assuming it means when they came in, their blood pressure was elevated.
Right.
That's what I'm hoping anyway, because mine's always low. But in that case, it's 6%, and cancer is less than that, 5.6%. What the hell?
Wow. That's kind of interesting, isn't it?
I know.
Yeah, it sounds like the trends is, the older you get, the more devastating the disease is. It just kind of makes you think that.
Yeah.
Hopefully, if you are in pretty good shape, that you've got a pretty good fighting chance to.
Well, the penetrance of this is the other question.
Yeah.
So that influenza virus in 1918 penetrated the population to the tune of 10%.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So if this penetrates to the tune of 10% and continues to have a 3% mortality rate,
mm-hmm.
it'll be less than the influenza pandemic. That will still be the worst human pandemic on record.
Sure.
Right?
Yep.
So because then they had 1%, so this would be a third of that,
mm-hmm.
If it's at 3% and that was 10% mortality.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be good.
Yeah.
Now, if it's twice that, if 20% of people get it, then it's still less than that pandemic,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
But if it's, if we come up any further than that, then it's sort of getting close to that. And if it's like 50, 60%, then this will be worse than, as far as absolute numbers of people who die,
mm-hmm.
will be worse than the pandemic. Still, most people won't get it.
Right.
If it's under under 50% penetrance, mm-hmm. most people won't get it. Mm-hmm. And of those that do, the vast majority of those will not die.
Right. Well,
so your odds are good. Anyone that's listening to this, your odds are good.
Yeah, just practice good hygiene. But you know, Dr. Steve, too, you think about, too, if let's say the Spanish flu, as they call it, 1918.
Yep.
And the coronavirus is, let's just say if these viruses are exactly the same as far as penetrance and things of that nature.
Yep.
At least we have now a little bit better technology.
This is true.
You know, the health, thank goodness, Western medicine has continued to advance. You know, back then there was not a lot of great
ventilators,
right? And not communication. In other words, you know, the ability for us to know that China's got this disease today,
yes,
in real time, is beneficial to reducing the spread. So
absolutely, people are politicizing this, and I don't care. You know, I'm a libertarian.
Oh hell, they'd politicize a fucking chicken sandwich if they could.
Well, you know, that's true.
Give yourself a beer.
I'll give you one of those.
People,
for that.
Come on.
People are politicizing. You know, well, Trump is into. You know, it's like, what do you want him to do? This is coming. Now, the one thing that he did do was ban travel immediately, and that slowed this thing down to the point that, you know, first thing you try to do is contain it, and then you got to mitigate it. Mm-hmm. That we really don't have any other strategies for this until we have treatment.
Until the treatment's right.
And so slowing it down to buy us some time to try to get some information in the hands of healthcare providers to get the word out that this is coming my academy meeting, the American Academy of Hospitality Medicine, just canceled their academy meeting. I think that's smart. South by Southwest canceled.
Yes.
That sucks, but
terrible. But
you don't want another Philadelphia.
Right. Common.
What the
not
hell
sure
was
what that,
that
was.
You don't want another Philadelphia
episode.
What the shit? Where is that coming from? Is that coming from Alexa?
That's her. Yeah, she's offline, it looks like.
Oh, okay. Is she?
Yeah, it looks like it, yeah.
No, that's a notification. That's okay. I wish she wouldn't do that.
Yes.
We don't want another example of what happened to Philadelphia in 1918, where all those people got together and were just spreading the virus to everybody. You know?
Yeah.
So I heard South by Southwest isn't giving people their money back, though.
That's my understanding. I think that I don't want to say it's maybe it's Cayocho in Miami. I think is doing the same thing. They're canceling a music festival in Miami and not offering refunds.
Cayocho.
I think Cayocho.
Cayocho.
Eighth Street. Yeah, 8th Street.
Yeah, South by Southwest refusing to issue refunds after being canceled due to coronavirus. This is from page 6, so this will be pretty sensational reporting here. Let's see what they have to say. This year's music festival season is headed south fast. After Austin canceled its long-running annual South by Southwest festival due to concerns over the spread of coronavirus, the company behind the festival is now refusing to refund thousands of ticket buyers their purchases.
Yes.
South by Southwest's original terms and conditions of participation states, okay, here we go.
Oh, God.
Any and all payments made to SXSW are not refundable for any reason. Whoa! Including, without limitation, failure to use credentials due to illness, acts of God, travel-related problems, acts of terrorism, loss of employment, and or duplicate purchases. According to a spokesperson, however, they will be honoring tickets for future. This is a pretty good deal for them, because if they don't have to give that money back and they don't have to pay the talent, they just made themselves quite the, oh, goodness gracious. Yeah. Now, Moog Fest got canceled this year. They gave everybody their money back immediately, you know? And it was canceled for other reasons. But I bet this same wording was in theirs, and they just said, well, we're just giving it back.
Yeah, I think that makes the most sense. And I think I told you, we're going to the big festival over in North Carolina. It's Americana Bluegrass Festival, the Merle Festival, and I'm really concerned about that mid-April.
I think all of these festivals are going to be canceled
Probably for a while.
Says we're allowing registrants to defer up for up to 3 years through the 2023 event. We're also working on other ways to add value to their deferred registration. So not only will they be able to take advantage of a future South by Southwest, but there will be extra benefits included as well. Okay. All right. Well, you know, I get it. Mm-hmm. If they'll honor them in the future, then that's fine.
Sure.
Although they ought to give people the option to refund. You know, what if this was you're on your bucket list and you're on your last legs? Yeah. Like, I just want to go to South by Southwest one time. And, you know, this damn coronavirus. Right. They're not going to be there 3 years from now.
Yeah, if you've already spent your vacation for the year, it's like, you know, you can't come back in August when they're going to have it.
Yeah.
It's like, well, fuck. No vacation.
Well, that happened to us once. Yep. With another, when the Iraq War broke out, they canceled our trip to Rome. Mm-hmm. I took a damn Italian class. Io parlo un po' l'italiano. Ho studiato per 3 mesi soltanto.
So you studied for 3 months Italian.
Very, yeah, very good.
Yeah.
So, but I was ready to go, and then they canceled it. And then when they rescheduled it, it was like a week before Tacey's due date, and she was still trying to figure out how to make it work, but it just didn't happen.
Oh, man.
So, anyway. Yeah. So, what else? Yeah, that's about it. So,
don't we have any questions on, like, penises or poop or something?
We do. I was going to see if there was something else that I wanted to talk about this, but I can't remember what it was, but it's okay. Oh, yeah. One guy called in about he's got ankylosing spondylitis.
Okay, sure.
And ankylosing spondylitis is an inflammatory, you know, bone and joint disease. And those folks, like others with like rheumatoid arthritis or psoriasis, Crohn's disease, take these things called biologicals. Mm-hmm. And he was wondering if that was going to be a problem. So I went to arthritis.org, and this was an update from March 6th. And so they take these biologicals. What it does is suppresses their immune system, or one part of their immune system, not the whole thing, but just one part of it. It says, we don't know whether taking immunosuppressant drugs further increases the risk of catching COVID-19. But Michael George, a rheumatologist and assistant professor of medicine and epidemiology at the University of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia, by the way, the site of the Philadelphia parade in 1918 that exploded the influenza epidemic, but says that, but they've learned a lot since then, mm-hmm. Says that in relation to viruses in general, limited data suggests some of the drugs used to treat autoimmune and inflammatory types of arthritis, particularly biologicals and corticosteroids, may contribute to higher risk or severity of viral infection. A recent large study of people with cardiovascular disease found that hydroxychloroquine, that's Plaquenil, does not increase the risk of infection, and methotrexate, which is another immunosuppressant we used to use as a chemotherapy drug, increases the risk of infection only slightly. The concern with immune suppression is that the virus could replicate more freely, sure, and cause more severe or extensive disease. For this reason, it's important if you're taking these medications to contact your doctor right away if you think you've been exposed or are experiencing flu-like symptoms. So they don't know. We just don't know. The better part of valor is to be really careful if you're on a biologic, and a lot of people got to be on them. Mm-hmm. I was able to wean myself off my prednisone, which I was taking for my polymyalgia rheumatica, and actually I feel okay. So I've been off. I've been on a milligram for about a week, and tonight I'm not taking any. We'll see what happens. So, because it's all about me, don't you know?
Right on.
All right. Okie doke. Well, let's take a regular question. Are you ready to do that?
Let's do it.
Number one thing, don't take advice from some asshole on the radio.
All right. Oh, and by the way, assholes, literally and figuratively, don't go buy all the toilet paper.
No.
How much shitting do you need to do?
You know, people are making masks. Because they're out of masks.
Okay, let's talk about masks for a second.
Yeah, that's what they're doing.
Stop with the masks unless you have it.
Right. So you don't cough on other people.
So when you do cough, you're not spreading droplets. The stuff is spread by droplets, which means when I cough, I'm, you know, if I'm standing in the middle of a room and let's say there's the walls are 100 yards away, so I'm in the middle of this giant room and I cough, there will be a spray of droplets in front of me and they will hit the floor. They don't stay in the air. This is not an airborne disease.
Gravity.
So gravity will pull them to the floor. Now, if there's a table there and I cough on the table, those particles can stay there and may be active for some time until somebody washes it. So it could be up to 9 days. They don't know.
Oh, wow.
But water, soap and water, kills the shit out of this thing. This virus is very fragile in the presence of soap and water. Mm-hmm. Because it has an outer membrane that has to remain intact or it can't function, and that membrane is just wiped away by soap and water. Okay. So now I couldn't find antimicrobial wipes at the store, which was idiotic also. And but you can use things like if you're going to fly and you want to wipe off the seat or the whatever the armrest. Mm-hmm. You can use electronic wipes. Those have alcohol and benzalkonium chloride and all kinds of crap in them, whatever's in that. Mm-hmm. And that'll work just about as well, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. And but people were like, oh, you know, I took a picture of the empty aisle of the Clorox wipes completely wiped out in my grocery store. And people were like, just go to Amazon, boomer. And it's like, okay. Millennial, go to Amazon and try to buy it.
Right on.
Because you're saying that tells me you haven't even bothered, you know, and if you go there, yeah, they have it. It's on their website and the shit's all like will be delivered April 16th or whatever, you know, so.
Not two-day delivery.
Stop buying this stuff.
Yep.
You know, take some natural precautions. If you think that you may be at risk for being quarantined for a while, then you need some stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, I bought a couple of cases of ramen just so my kids can eat.
Sure.
Just in case, you know, we get stuck in the house. But the thing is, I'm a healthcare provider. Unless I get the virus, I have to go to work.
Right on.
You know? So.
We did buy a couple extra bottles of liquor just in case.
Yes. I think that's perfect.
Vodka. Because, you know, vodka.
You can use it anyway.
You could use it as cleaner or you can drink it.
That's right.
It's dual purpose. It's
now, you're supposed to have 60% alcohol for your hand, you know, your hand gel to work. Yeah. So vodka being, what, 40%? It's 80 proof, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, won't do the trick.
No.
The Tito's people are saying, please don't use vodka as a hand sanitizer. Drink it.
Drink it.
That's what it's for.
Enjoy.
All right. Yeah. So stop with all this hoarding shit. I saw people fighting. Now, look, if I was bought up all the toilet paper, like this woman who, wherever she was, I think it was in another country, there's a viral video, no pun intended. And she bought a bunch of toilet paper and it was all gone. She bought the last of it. And this woman behind her said, can I just have one of them? And she's like, no, it's mine. And then they start fighting, and they're fist fighting, and they had to break them up and all this stuff. It's like, if seriously had bought all the toilet paper and somebody behind me wanted toilet paper, I would let them have one.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how much ass wiping must you do? And what do you think is going to happen? This isn't a zombie apocalypse.
No.
And honestly, if there is a zombie apocalypse, the last thing you're going to be worried about is wiping your ass with tissue paper.
Yep.
Cut it out.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was there the other day, and what was it? There was, I needed Ziplocs, and I was going to get two boxes of them, and there was only two, and I figured, oh, shit, people are hoarding Ziplocs. So I only bought one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Let somebody else be the asshole to take the last one. That karma's on them. All right. So we do the Ronnie B? We did.
Number one thing, don't take advice from some asshole on the radio.
All right.
Hey, I'm wondering if there's any type of underlying condition that I'm dealing with.
Okay.
I called in a while back mentioning if you eat, like, steak fries too fast, or notice even with bread, you'll feel like a weird choking sensation, and it's very, very bad. But I've noticed that I had that just recently I was really hungry. I don't know if I just ate too fast, but it was just a, like grilled chicken breast, you know, with some barbecue sauce. And I ended up kind of having the same thing, but I've never really had that with eating too fast or being too hungry, but you had said it was the starch from like something like a chunky potatoes, french fries, something like that, but I'm having that with even chicken. This is the first time it happened with the chicken.
Okay, we don't need the
could
full menu.
Could there be some kind of underlying thing? I think
yes.
At one point I
what
had bird,
grilled
I think
chicken?
I've gotten rid of that. But is there anything that be concerned about, or is it...
Well,
what if it's what chicken it? Of the sea, I wonder?
That's
if
he... right, or chicken of the cave, which is where COVID-19 came from.
Right on.
Yeah, was the chicken sous vide or was it done in a pressure canal? Okay, dude, sorry. I never want to make anybody feel sorry that they called. So
no, he could have an annoying issue for sure.
He has an esophageal stricture of some sort.
Yeah, maybe a hiatal hernia.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right. Which would cause a stricture of the esophagus. I mean, a functional stricture. It doesn't have to be, you know, from scar tissue or anything.
Sure.
So something is causing food. You should be able to pretty much eat as fast as you want to. As long as you're not aspirating it into your lungs, you should be able to eat pretty fast. You should be able to stand on your head and eat upside down, and peristalsis should bring that food into your stomach. Mm-hmm. We used to have to do that experiment when I was in like sixth grade or something. They'd stand us on our head and make us eat an apple, and you could see how you could still swallow it and
right.
still ends up in your stomach. It's crazy. So, if you're eating and food is getting stuck, that warrants evaluation because the question is what's doing it?
Right.
Do you have scar tissue because you've had chronic reflux? Is there something pushing in on the esophagus? Do you have a diverticulum in your esophagus? In other words, a pouch in the esophagus so it's not a smooth tube going all the way down. That needs to get checked out. So who would do that? Well, if it's way upper, well, you know what? It should be a GI no matter
anyway,
what because
yeah.
he's swallowing. He's not aspirating. So yeah. I was thinking, you know, if you have way upper symptoms, then sometimes an ear, nose, and throat guy can look down there with a fiber optic. But no, you need to go to a gastroenterologist. Tell them you have a sensation of food sticking, started with bread, and now it's things like meat. And what they'll do is they will have you not eat anything after midnight, come in the morning, stick a needle in your arm, give you some goofy juice, and they'll go, yeah, and well, you won't even be aware of it
yeah.
because they'll go, okay, count backward from 10 or whatever, and you go 10, 9, and then you go, I don't know. Should I finish counting?
When?
And then, you know, and then
yet?
you open your eyes. What are they doing? And they're done.
Yeah.
I mean, it's literally like that.
Yeah.
The last one of those I had, that's how it happened with me, is they said, we're going to give you some medicine. And I laid there and laid there and laid there. And I said, when are they going to start?
Right on.
And they were already done.
Yeah. And it's like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
What just happened?
They were just giving me a second to wake up. It was really cool. It's a neat feeling. And then they can look down there and see what it is. Is it something to worry about? Is it something we can easily fix? If you've just got a little scarring down there because you've had reflux your whole life and acid has gone in there and sort of scarred down part of your esophagus, they'll just go down with a dilator, open it up, and they may have to do that every once in a while until that part of your esophagus learns that it doesn't need to keep scarring down anymore because they're going to treat that reflux.
Right.
All right. So, but get that checked. You said you called earlier and asked the same question, and I'm sure we told you the same damn thing then. This time you got to go get it checked. Quit fucking around. Okay. I'm dropping the F-bomb a lot. I'm not in a good mood today. I got to tell you that. It's stuff with my job is not... making me
a little stressed out.
A little bit. So I'm sorry for the French.
Steve, how the heck are you?
Good, man.
Good. Yeah, I'm good.
oh, okay. I get it. What he's doing is responding to the person that called saying, I hate it when Dr. Steve pretends like they're live calls. They're not live calls. These are voicemails.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody got pissed because, you know, someone goes, hey, Dr. Steve. I go, hey, man.
Hey, man.
I'm not trying to fool anybody,
no.
But now I'm going to try to fool somebody. If someone tunes in right now, they may be fooled.
Hey, Dr. Steve.
Hey, man.
How the heck are you?
I'm good, man. How are you doing?
Good.
Yeah, good.
I'm good.
Yeah, what you
Thanks
got?
For asking. Anyway, I had a question, if I may.
Okay, absolutely.
Hang on.
Yep.
I'm getting to it.
Okay, well, get to it.
I was listening to your podcast the other day, becoming a doctor in the path that you set out upon after meeting a guy who was a doctor, and you're like, jeez, I'm smarter than this.
Yes. Right. For people that don't know, you just go back and listen to last. It was either last show or the show before I told the story. But how I realized I could go to medical school because this guy who I was mentoring, who was just dumb as a box of rocks, turned out to be a physician. So.
So anyway, I've had some college. I'm relatively smart, or so I like to say.
Yeah.
I'd love to go into a specialty, ear, nose, and throat. I find that interesting.
It's awesome.
Always been dealing with sinus issues and my ears and my eyes and my nose and also my throat. So, you know, what would you suggest? What would you think would be a good jumping off point, a start, get the toe in the water, you know?
I can totally help.
Is there a school where they teach people to be doctors and stuff?
Yes, it's called medical school, my friend. So, yes, so you want to be an ear, nose, and throat. You're putting the cart a little bit before the horse, but that's okay. It's good to have goals and reasons to do things. So you're interested in ear, and that's a great field. It's so cool. You get to pull stuff out of people's noses, and you get to do cool procedures, and it's a really good one. If I had a 1,000-year lifetime, I would definitely go back and do an ENT residency because it is fascinating. And Dr. Pillsbury at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, and Newton Fisher, those two were my role models. And they were amazing ear, nose, and throat physicians, along with their partner, Dr. Biggers, who also was great and one of the people that taught me a lot about medicine. But anyway, so the first thing you got to do is get in. You got to get into medical school. You can't be an ENT without an MD, and you can't get an MD or a DO without going to either medical school or osteopathic school. So how do you get in? Well, you have to decide, do I want to go to an MD school? Do I want to go to a DO school? Or do I want to do both? Get catalogs from both, and what you want to find is their prerequisites. What classes do you have to get in? Now, if you took those, let's say one of them is, you know, you got to have a semester of biology. And let's say you made a D on it. You need to go back and take it again.
Yes.
Do what I did. I was called a post-baccalaureate student taking baccalaureate studies. So you go back and you say, look, I want to go to medical school, but I don't have the prerequisites. I farted around and now I'm really motivated. And so you go to a summer session, take chemistry 101. Get Shams College Chemistry, get a chemistry study group, and do nothing but that for that semester. It's going to be really fast because it's a summer session. It's going to go fast, but you're just taking one class.
And painful.
Live it, breathe it. I didn't find it to be painful. I found it to be stimulating because you're now learning some stuff that's really going to apply to you later, and there's a reason to learn this dumb chemistry now.
No, I know it. I know.
And you didn't know.
Doesn't mean you have to like it, though.
When you were you should like it. Make yourself like it. Make yourself love it.
Love it.
And get, you know, do what I did and get like 115 average in that. And then when you go to the post-baccalaureate, you know, to go get your past post-baccalaureate classes, you show that to them. Because they'll let anybody take a summer session. Mm-hmm. But for you to go for a semester and take a bunch of prerequisites for medical school, you got to demonstrate to them that you're going to be somewhat successful. Mm-hmm. So you've aced your chemistry 101 and chemistry 102 in summer session. Now you're going to take biology, organic chemistry, physics, and calculus all at once. Mm-hmm. You don't have to take it all at once, but if you want to do this quickly, if you're a little older, you want to do it as fast as you can do it all in 1 year. Some of these things you may already have. If you took calculus before and you made an A in it, you don't have to retake it.
Yep.
But you got to get those prerequisites, and they're in the medical school catalog, or you can just go online and get it. What a catalog! I'm 100 years old. They'll tell you what the prerequisites are. So you got to get all that under your belt. That's a minimum. You have to do those.
Right.
And you need to show them that you can make A's in that. Mm-hmm. Because what the admissions committee is going to see is, well, there's this older person coming through. We need to see that they're able to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
And that they're capable, that they're truly motivated. So for me, you know, they saw B, B plus, B minus, A in my major. I made A's in my major, but everything else was B, B minus, maybe a C here and there.
Sure.
And then all of a sudden, I go back to take my prerequisites. It's A, 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 A. Sure, I'm on the dean's list for the first time. I got a 4.0. You know, if I had done that before, I would have graduated magna cum laude, you know, but I didn't. But it looked good. You know, when they're looking at your transcript. Now, you will then, this is excellent preparation for the MCAT, the Medical College Admission Test, but don't just rest on that. You want to also take like Stanley Kaplan or Sylvan or whatever to, you know, MCAT preparation course, because you need to nail that too. So take an MCAT preparation course. You will, all this stuff will be fresh to you. For me, when they had physics questions on the MCAT, well, hell, I just took it. For everybody else, they took it their freshman year to get it out of the way, you know. And then you have to nail the interview, because you'll get an interview if you do all the things that I told you.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to nail the interview. You need to be interesting, and you need to point out stuff that you've done, that your life experience has shown you, that a kid just getting straight out, you know, going high school, college, medical school won't have.
Right.
For me, it was championship wrestling, believe it or not. My second interview with a faculty member was 100%. She went, oh, I see you did championship wrestling. It's like, yeah, sure. She said, what was that like? We talked about that the rest of the time. I told championship wrestling stories.
Mm-hmm.
She was fascinated. And I know when the admissions committee brought my chart up, they said, is that guy that did championship wrestling? And they're like, yeah, that's that guy. Boom, you're in.
Yeah.
Okay? Because everything else fit.
Right.
You want to stand out a little bit. Yes. Oh, also volunteer. You need to volunteer at some places. Volunteer at a nursing home.
Any damn thing.
You know, any damn thing. But yeah, a nursing home is a good one, because it shows that you have compassion for the most vulnerable, or, you know, at a daycare or whatever, but it needs to be in a medical capacity.
Yeah. Yeah. And okay, and you're right, they do love having people that are athletes or part of teams.
Yes.
That have done things like that. They can
some
see
accomplishments. What have you accomplished,
yeah,
in the time that you weren't thinking about going to medical
stuck
school?
To it
and
made a difference.
How did that make you want to? Now, right, going in there and say, well, I want to be an ENT because I have sinus problems.
Because I love Dr. Steve.
That might be the beginning of the conversation, but you need to, you know, I've done some research and I found right out that, you know, you can really help people with this, but I just really want to help people. And, you know, I'm just called to do it. That kind of language will get you a long way in there. So good luck with it. Let us know if you really do decide to pursue it. It's a long slog, but I will tell you, I was 27 when I went to medical school, and, now I'm 64, and it was the greatest thing that I did other than having kids,
mm-hmm,
you know. And that year of prerequisites, I was like an effing sponge, dude. I learned so much stuff. It was unbelievable. There's Tacy, but we're almost out of time. We're working on a new song, Band of Horses, song called The Funeral, which has got nothing to do with anything. It just is a cool song. So we're not trying to be, you know, whatever, too dark for the room, man, or anything like that. But it'll, we'll have that for you next time, maybe.
Right on.
That'll be the time after next.
Yeah.
Because I think we're running a special next week, and then, and then we'll be back to regular stuff. Maybe we'll do a music episode. We'll probably need
episode
to at that point.
Yes.
All right. Well, we can't forget Rob Sprantz, Bob Kelly, Greg Hughes, Anthony Cumia, Jim Norton, Travis Teff, Lewis Johnson, Paul Ofcharsky, Eric Nagel, Roland Campo, Sam Roberts, Pat Duffy, Dennis Falcone, Ron Bennington, and Fez Watley, whose early support of this show has never gone unappreciated. By the way, I've always traded plugs for your time on this show. Now that you're taking Simply Herbals off the table, am I going to have to start paying you for doing this?
Yes, cash. Lots of cash.
Well, it's been nice knowing you, dude. Listen to our SiriusXM show on the Faction Talk channel, SiriusXM channel 103, Saturday at 8 p.m. Eastern, Sunday at 5 p.m. Eastern, on demand and other times at Jim McClure's pleasure. Many thanks to our listeners whose voicemail and topic ideas make this job very easy. Go to our website at drsteve.com for schedules and podcasts and other crap. Until next time, check your stupid nuts for lumps. Quit smoking, get off your asses, and get some exercise. We'll see you in 1 week for the next edition of Weird Medicine. Thanks, Scott.